There's a really good way of marking students' work or short little bits of work, which tells you not how much science they know, but it gives you an insight into the quality or their capability of doing science. A very important point, and there's a few other aspects to it. I can actually pick up capabilities that you may well miss. The actual term for it, and I'll introduce it to you, is called SOLO, Structured Observation of Learning Outcomes, SOLO. I'll talk about it. It's a great tool, and this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. There's several aspects to it. I'm doing cardiac rehab, and I'm just basically training my brain to speak faster and more coherently without breaks, a bit more understandable. Just get the quality of podcasting up, get the podcasting audience and Twitter and various things up. There's that aspect of it. There's also the aspects that I've come from a different background from teaching. I came from the science labs, and having employed graduates, I knew what I was looking for, and it gives you a different perspective. And so you'll note that some of the things I've tell you about are some really good lessons which produce some really good employable results, and also some really basic techniques which meet scientific standards rather than testimonials or your friends say it, or it's authorized by an institution. This is things which have a really solid research base. To get back onto that, what I've recently told you about is the ability to cast any situation into a scientific thinking term, and these are the standard things which are actually well tested, proven, researched, and this is these three word things that you can say, and students will see the three words and know to be trained to actually do it. One is think, pair, share, and they actually do those three words. The other one, which links onto that, is predict, observe, explain, which is basically gather predictions, and you can actually gather the predictions, a range of predictions, and actually get a vote on the different predictions, observe the result, and explain, which is the fundamental scientific process that is science as an endeavour in which nature is your witness, is your judge and jury, or is the jury, and actually tells you, are you on the right track? It's not so much about how well you can put an argument, how much you can persuade yourself. It's looking at the actual basis of it. And obviously, there's many times a conflict in the way that people have a customary or a persuasive political framework that you teach people. It's very necessary, but it doesn't necessarily bode well for science. And so the overall education system is very much about teaching people the very necessary things about the days of the week, the counting system, English grammar, how to be a nice policeman, how to pay your taxes, all these things which are basically, at the end of the day, not very scientifically based. You can't actually run a series of tests, but if you do them wrong, you'll wind up in jail or poor or not being able to feed yourself or survive in society. So there's this fundamental thing of surviving society, and then there's science, which is a different type of activity. And again, what I'm going to tell you about is a activity which I looked at that academic groups and universities have engaged with professionals within the education department and developed this technique. Since 1982, it was first put forward by John Biggs from the University of Newcastle. Now, he's now since retired, but I still keep in contact with him. And I'll sort of tell you his story. He wrote this basic idea of basically a high gain capability detector for students. And I'm going to put it forward like that. That's the way that a scientist walking into education would see it. It's a high gain detector, so you can go around the place, detect nascent capability. It's very much like a high sensitivity gas detector. If you're looking for a gas leak, it's obviously you'll be working very, very hard with a low sensitivity gas detector. You'll be running all over the place, testing high and low, and yes, it will work when you're right on top of a gas leak. But if you've got a high sensitivity detector, you can actually detect the trail, the scent of capability. So that's the idea. And in terms of scientific rigor, this is a good thing. So it's almost as though I'm a scientist that I've broken into the education department. I've spent a bit of time, about 10 years, following up different tracks. And there are a lot of dead ends or a lot of phony ends. So I've just, what stimulated me to say this is I picked up a book called Using the Solo Taxonomy, Solo as a Framework for Teaching. And when I read into that, I realized the person didn't have rigor. He used testimonial of his own classroom and applied a whole lot of keywords like lifelong learning, solo taxonomy, the grades of learning and stuff like that. All these catchphrases, but it wasn't what we would call scientifically rigorous. So I'm sort of like a spy going into the place and picking out what's really good and really strong from a scientific viewpoint. And of course, doing things differently, obviously, breaking off from cardiac rehab, having experienced that the education, the basic needs aren't necessarily catered for, I've realised, oh, perhaps this is not for me, perhaps I should actually apply what I've learnt in, military and industrial training and apply it to myself and actually develop the key skill of podcasting and actually address a key point of getting educational ideas out into the broader community. So once again, with the Think, Pair, Share, Predict, Observe, Explain, these are really good basic activities. They're research-based. I must admit, I haven't seen it practiced in Australian schools. I've used it highly effectively, and with any training drill, which is not the main feature, but a route to getting from point A to point B very quickly, it's a worthwhile thing to do. In this case, this is a marking scheme, and you must say, "Oh, marking scheme." It generates a mark. So typically, a traditional scheme with a particular cohort of students will produce a very step-like function when looking at a particular topic. And then what you do is you test sufficient numbers of topics to blur that step out. But in general, you'll get a mark range of people not knowing it, not getting the basic ideas. And then as they start to get the individual items that you have specified right and say it back to you, they'll get the higher marks. So the students get trained to do that. Now, John Biggs says this is this is the creator of it. This assesses the quality of their thinking rather than whether they know specifically this or that. So it's a different approach, and I think it's a very worthwhile thing to get. So you create a different mark. Now I'll just go back into my understanding of it before you switch off and dismiss me. When I first encountered this coming out of the research labs into teacher training, I should say that when I first came out, they were trying to get people from industry into teaching, and they said, here, we're offering this, we'll give you a BSc, we'll train you in a Bachelor of Science, a first science degree, and a teaching degree to get you into education. And of course, by the time they'd spoken to a room full of scientists, I and another site, there were 30, and by the end of the next day, only two, myself and another person, turned up. So they're obviously saying perhaps the wrong thing. And then they spoke with me for a while and they said, you've got a PhD. That's not a BSc. You're going to have to do a BSc. It's the only way in through this program is if you do a BSc. And that was it. I did a second BSc, which was a really fantastic thing to do because I had sort of regressed a long way since my BSc, came back to do it, I don't know, 15, 20 years later, 20 years later. And what surprised me is that although some things changed, the way that students approached work and the digital format moved, the actual curriculum content hadn't changed, and some of the mistakes that I was being taught 20 years ago at university and I discovered it was still being taught, and there was no way to change any of it. Getting back into it, and one of the things I did in teacher training is come across this technique, speak to the people involved, got trained in it, and then when it came across, this technique was used. So every year, this is probably 100,000 students, around that, in year 8 and year 10, so there are 13 years of education, primary and secondary education, or school education in Australia. So this is a big deal. Millions of dollars are involved in this, and every student throughout the state, this is the state of New South Wales, similar to the state of Texas or something like that. I'm just trying to think. New South Wales will be one of your smaller states in the United States, probably Florida population. It's a population of around 5 million. So Australia's got a population roughly the population of Texas, and a little bit smaller than continental US, so it's a bit dispersed, just to give you an idea. So this is a lot of papers, and the theory of so you have to understand that there's a theory, a four-level theory, and this is translated into a seven-level mark, amazingly. And it's that translation to a seven-level mark which is really powerful. And so I say this because I was trained, and so I corrected 2,000 or 3,000 scripts 1 year, and then 6,000 scripts the next year, and then got on to an exam writing committee to write questions and multiple choice questions, and this is with psychologists, and it will be trialed at schools. So you got the questions actually worked, produced a range of marks which aimed to detect the quality and capability of the students each year. So this is not to qualify students, to people to go yes and throw your hat up at the end. This is to give a guide and feedback to teachers on the health of their science teaching. Now, remarkably, through all of this, Australia's science standing in PISA is slipping. And look, there are reasons that you can see from inside the system. I'm not focusing on the problems, I'm focusing on the good points. And that being said, this system, by the time I came to it, what used to be a floor or two floors of a high-rise office building was gutted, and it was been reduced. So one of these things, if it's not understood by the general public, it's very easy to cut quietly while no one's looking. And so this system has been very much cut and run down. But it doesn't mean that a scientist can come in and start to advise it. So this is my capability. I suppose, quite experienced on it. Now, the simpler system, this experience is not, it can be just dismissed with a simple wave of the hand at this stage. That means sort of big career implications for me on the ground here, but it doesn't have to be implications for you out there in teacher and learning lab. So let's get back into the solo taxonomy. A taxonomy is basically a lookup guide. I could speak for a while about different taxonomies and people's interpretations and the shortcomings of it. So look, I'm one of the people who just read and read back and read theses. Oh, look, that's another fantastic resource. If you ever want to really seriously study education, is just pick up education theses from the universities, and these are really good guides to walk your way in. That's basically the strongest strength I've had in getting into education, is a little bit of teacher training, a little bit of experience, but also reading these theses, which go beyond testimonial, but do multi-year studies to see you've educated someone at one point, what is the effect 10 years on in terms of attitudes and ability to solve problems? What is the big economic impact of it? Getting back to it, the solar taxonomy, the structured observation of learning outcomes. So forgetting its misuse, let's look at how it's used. It's a structured observation. So they produce a piece of work which is an example of a learning outcome, and you have a structured observation way such that you can actually get hundreds of teachers trained up properly to actually churn through in about 3 days or 4 days of hard work correcting things online to go through and actually do structured observations and produce a range of marks which reflect the quality. So the there are interesting things that it goes from the Biggs paper that goes in two lines, one which has been adopted by sort of people who've, the non-academic people, the people who've sort of read it and said, oh, well, look, I'm going to bolt this onto my teaching practice. I think people have called it frameworks, teaching frameworks, and that's a bit dubious. But let's go down that first framework of the initial thing. And the analysis is that there are, let's see, five levels of capability or understanding displayed. The zeroth level, the first level, is informal or unstructured view. Then there's the term is unimodal or one structure, or you identify one aspect of it. So you're looking at it and the student can actually make one observation that something's big, hot, or something like that. Then there's it's unilateral, multilateral. They can actually make two or three observations. It's hot, it's big, and it's been heated. Then they can make, that's an example, but then they can do relational. I'm using I'm picking out of my head the similar terms that is used in the two systems going forward. Relational, that is, it's small, it's hot, it's been heated, and so therefore it will heat more quickly. So they've made that connection there. And then there's the extended abstract idea, that highest level, that fifth level here. And this has been able to say, well, at school I've learnt the concept of the flow of heat, or there is a reason. And even more, I can say that if you make it smaller, it will heat further. This is to actually use some scientific thinking. And so this is the quality of this person. Do they engage in it, make a single unilateral, multilateral, or multi-level, relational view, or extended abstract? This is a way, if you do your observations along this level, you can actually pick out where someone's at and actually move them along the path. So if they're making one observation, it's very difficult to tell them to do relational stuff because they haven't made a second observation to make a relationship with. Or if they're up to the level of making relationships, if you start talking immediately about the abstract stuff, it's going to be very difficult. So you can see can see there. So this is a great conceptual basis. It's called a taxonomy, and that has to be converted to a marking system. So fortunately, I've described a marking system, which was the which I'll describe now, which is where I've got a text, and rather than think very deeply about it, I have to be able to scan it. In fact, in under 5 seconds or 5 seconds, 10 seconds, I'll be able to read it and actually hit a button and say, this is a zero, this is a four, this is a five, this is a six. In terms, just looking at it, you can look at it, and you can, as you read it, your number systems go up. One, two, three. No, that's three. Four. You can see four instantly, and things like that. There's certain clues. And so here I've had a five-level system, and this has got to go to a seven-level system for marking. So you're pre-structural, I think, pre-structured or unstructural. The basic marking system goes zero if the student can make no original observation. So if in the question you say, for instance, you're looking at dead fish from a power station, the power station is producing, just to give you a background, the power station produces heat, the heat reduces the amount of oxygen available in the water, the fish die, and it just gives you the information that there's a power station produces heat. Here's the oxygen level versus heat in water, and here are all these dead fish. Now, if this student's just made an observation, there are dead fish, and you've told them there's dead fish, that actually earns a zero. Basic thing that is given to them. So although they give the information, you have to make sure that there's certain parts of information that they can't give, which is unoriginal. Then for one mark, they have to observe, make one observation, at least one observation that, say, the water has fish and plants in it, or the water is travelling from the power station downstream. This is downstream from it. For two marks, it's an observation like that, but more than one. So it's travelling downstream, and at the power station is producing heat to make electricity. There's some waste heat going to that water. Put those two things together. Three would be to say that this is causing. This is basically someone who hasn't been to school would be able to work that out from zero to three. So the third level is a relationship. They've actually put the two things together to make an observation, a conclusion, which uses no school grade or education level. So that gives you, if someone gets from zero to three, you know, well, basically, that they haven't absorbed stuff from school, but someone's operating at three is going to be able to operate really quickly. Someone operating at one and two needs to be pushed upwards. The next level is, U subscript one, unilateral one, multilateral subscript one, relational subscript two. You then go up to a new level to get to the extended abstract or information that you've given by school. So one of the observations would involve a term given by school. So you'd say perhaps water is a compound, would possibly. The idea of compound is an abstract idea brought about from education. Similarly, two, you'd say that water's a compound and fish respire, or that they breathe oxygen. Now, the highest level would be able to put that together to say that the water is depleted of oxygen and the fish need oxygen diet. But there's a whole series of other things they could say. They could say, in this case, that the fish aren't adapted yet, or there'll be new fish moving in, or the animals move away, or they'll have some sort of advanced relational concept of a hypothesis or an advanced thinking. It's got a high quality, and it does take, say, a few hours of marking, looking at examples to work through, to match your marking to the quality process. Now, the end result of this is that you, for a small section of work, which is got a stimulus, a fundamental question just to get the student writing, and then an explain scientifically, and so this says, with your science training, as what you've learned at school, try and connect everything together and make conclusions. What is likely to happen, or what is the consequence of what's happening here? Again, you've got everyday observations, and you've got to move them from here. So this predict, observe, explain is a similar thing. So you want, but in the reverse thing, you want multiple observations to fit in with a potential prediction, and which is explained. It's sort of a restructuring of it, but that high level, it produces a mark 0 to 6. Now, and this is a solo taxonomy. The solo that you'll read. So there's two levels. There's that 4 basic level, which is in literature, and then there's this. So that's level 1, which is used, and that has gone out into some fairly flaky, crazy ideas. And so you can pick up a book or a paper, check that it's written, it's got references on it, basically, and they can produce something rather. There's a universe here of the way teachers are using it. The way scientists use it is to actually produce some fairly rigorous results. Now, from the solo testing process, they feed back to the school some really interesting facts for them, for the whole school. They say, this is the area that you can focus on as a school. There's a large fraction of your students who are not motivated, or who are stuck at the putting, realizing that they need more than one observation to put together to make a relationship. By doing multiple choices of different areas of learning, they can see not only an area that is missing, but strategies that you could use. So they feed back to the school some very intense work. And unfortunately, this is not efficiently communicated. People are not schooled up enough to actually go through and realize what's going on. So if you're in the process of actually working to produce this entire cycle, you can see the idea, the concept of it, but it doesn't actually work. A few out there. There's some basic techniques of teaching, some good lessons to teach, but there's also this solo taxonomy, which is not very well. It's a sort of like a gold nugget, which is sort of hemmed up and isolated here. It's not necessarily being shared. Dare I say that solo marking technique or philosophy is adopted in most countries around the world. There are, if you check on it, most countries have really picked up on this. Now, this is Peter Hill Explains. Whether I think there's some realistic benefit of telling people that there is this technique out here, whether you can actually use it. Now, my actual thought as a scientist, a robotic scientist, looking at this and having marked it, is that interpretation of text and assigning a mark is like this, is the realm of artificial intelligence. If you've got 20,000, 30,000 scripts over a year, and you have human markers, you can have artificial intelligence address it. It is a doable. And you would say, well, this is outside. We don't have the context to do with it. But the advantage of doing it is quite profound, because this means that if you consider the statewide testing as a laboratory or a production environment, you can produce a product which can provide tests which don't have to be done at the same day right across the state through all students. So these test questions can be done by a class, and it can actually feed back to the class the level that you're at with artificial intelligence. And it doesn't have to be only Australia. It could be any country in the world. This is a real great opportunity, I believe, for science, is to use this highly developed, over 30 years of development, going down these tools and getting a tool which can rigorously give you information about your teaching techniques by looking at the cohort and individuals analysis, and it has been proven and it's really highly refined, but then it has its marketing or implementation issues. This is sort of my overall view of someone coming in from the outside. And of course, it's not that you're not appreciated if you say it. You have no opportunity in the current environment to say anything like this. There is no forum or no meeting or anything to do it. I suppose it's the transition of realizing, oh, there is no there's no ability to put things forward. Well, let's have a step back and think about what precisely you put forward. So my recommendations are to understand that there are these fantastic gold-plated, research-backed techniques in teaching of science, and their aspiration is to assess thinking quality, teaching quality, and provide a mark which is highly tuned, like a detector with a sensitivity which knows to point you in the right direction. That's the first thing for you to know. Perhaps to implement it, if you can. I definitely know how to mark and how to set up the correct questions, and there has to be a skill with it. But moreover, what I really, really recommend is the application of artificial intelligence to create a website, an internet website, which can actually take individual items in, a school item in, and produce feedback where and when it's needed. This is one of the problems of it. It's the test is conducted towards the end of year 8. The school gets its feedback for the next year, and so they can't actually apply their knowledge to their existing cohort of students over the existing points. It's sort of like this. It's not in time and efficiently. So that's my view in Peter Hill Explains. Sometimes I do simple topics. This is a slightly more complex topic. This is revealing something hidden, hidden from view, that only a scientist walking around the place will suddenly go, oh, and you're wise enough not to disturb the natives. And it's complicated to explain because you've got to set up the idea of podcasting and of teaching and of setting techniques and of helping people and trust like that. Then it's complicated again that you have to propose an idea outside people's comfort zone, the idea of using artificial intelligence to help and assist and fine-tune education beyond people's standard understanding is something which may be heresy for some people. But please take it as an idea, and if this is one idea out there, what other ideas must be out there? Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking and teaching science.